Hey, this is Coach Lee Allen from Rugby ATL, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello everybody, it's Scott here, Mike there. Welcome to episode 279 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. I believe we are 6 years of audio at least, which is a lot. If you must say. I don't think I've committed to 6 years of anything. My first marriage was less than five. It only took me 6 years to get finally pass my license and to be able to get my driver's license, so...
You only stuck with puberty for about 3 years, and you said, this is not for me, and reverted back.
When I was a kid, I was like, I remember being so self-conscious about hitting puberty, like, oh man, I can't wait, you know, like, and like being very, like, observant of like other boys in the grade, like, oh man, he's got facial hair. Oh man, he's got leg hair. Like, I used to like really want like hairy legs and things like that.
I just imagine you like looking at some like Sasquatch at the beach and all, and you're like, man, why can't it be me? No, it's not fair. God, why?
Well, I take it all back because now I'm hairy and, you know, all over the place. But yeah, that's an awkward time. That's an awkward time as a kid. That puberty stage, just the worst. Where like, I just remember being like very long, just appendages were just very long and gangly and like very spastic, if you will. That's how I would describe puberty for me.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever like an official, all right, you hit puberty. I know like everybody goes by like the voice crack and everything, but
yeah.
Like, there's no definitive, okay, now I'm officially all into, like, sex things and whatever.
Yeah.
And you never know. It's like, all right, is this okay? Is this what? I want to look at a magazine. Is that cool? Am I too early?
Why, you didn't have a puberty party for your official first day? You missed out.
No, I left out. Is that like a quinceañero or something like that?
Yeah. It's like a male version of a quinceañero. The first mustache hair you sprout, like once you find the first mustache hair, there's a celebration. You know the song, right?
No, I don't believe I've heard it, Scott.
Mustache on your face. Mustache. It's in this place. Mustache. We celebrate. Mustache, breastache, ain't it great? P-U-B-E-R-T-Y. P-U-B-E-R-P-T-Y. Puberty.
Man, that's a rocking jam. Is it true that a part of your party is you have to pluck said hair and put it in an amulet to be given to your next born child?
Correct. Mine is still sitting in the box it comes in. You actually save your first pair of underwear that you did not soil. So your parents probably have yours somewhere.
It's somewhere in the vicinity of Georgia, I would assume. I hope I don't have to fly back to Jersey to get my initial puberty underwear.
Right. So it's your first like solo underwear that they keep the mustache hair wrapped in. Until that day that you hit puberty, you have your puberty party, and then you give it to your first of kin. Okay. Usually for Christmas, it's a tradition to give it to Christmas instead of presents for one whole year. So that's what they unwrap right around like 13, 14 years old.
Oh, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Is it true that you have to go to school and give a report on the private part you most wish to touch? Because I did that and everyone gave me a weird look, so I wasn't sure if I did it too early.
Well, man, I told you not to do that in kindergarten, but
well, I mean, it just occurred, I thought, so it was kind of weird just walking into high school at 42 years old and doing that essay. I think they were having a pep rally or something like
right,
that
right, but, right, right.
You know, I'm like, I'm from Jersey. You Georgians don't understand.
All the alarms went off. All the guns came out. It was an awkward situation. We bailed you out, which is why we're looking for sponsors, because we lost them all that day.
Thank God for the podcast money and all, because there'd be so many jail sentences I'd be in right now.
Yeah, man. I mean, we are raking it in. So, I mean, go get arrested, Berlo. We got you. We got you here. Yep. That awkwardness never, I don't know, never completely went away from me. Like, still, like, to this day, I've actually been doing a bit about it, but to this day, like, a couple years ago, I don't know if I told this on the podcast or not, but might as well. To this day, around Christmas, a couple years ago, my dog was chewing my wife's underwear. Like, anytime it was left on the ground, he would chew these little holes in it. And she'd go to pick it up, and there'd be, like, little Swiss cheese holes. You know, like, she's like, God damn it, Toby! You know, my underwear! So, like, I, that year, went to Victoria's Secret and bought underwear and said it was from the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that became a tradition. And the problem is that involves me going to Victoria's Secret every year. And to me, that is like, that's like the seventh layer of hell for me. Like it, I'm still very awkward. Like, the minute you walk in, I feel like it's instantly 90 degrees. I feel like there's instantly like four 18-year-old girls like, who the hell is this creep? Like, I hope he's not here to try it on. You know, like, and then I'm there trying to, like, sort out underwear and, like, the 4 for $25 rack or whatever the hell it is, 5 for $25 special, and there's no sizes. I don't know what sizes are. There's letters I've never heard of. There's, like, P's and X's, and there's just, like, a lot of fragrance and heat. I still feel very awkward in Victoria's Secret. I don't know if you've had this experience.
The missus, I've never had an experience where she told me to buy anything like that, or really, I don't know what her style is. I do know, like, I had a brother-in-law who, he's a former brother-in-law who was married to my sister, who famously on December 24th pretty much said, oh crap, didn't buy the wife anything for Christmas, and he just literally went in the store and just started grabbing random bras and underwear, which my sister says were both three sizes too small and three sizes too large at the same time.
Nice.
That she had to unwrap, and it's like, Merry Christmas, honey.
Maybe he was just being nice, like, hey, I don't care if you lose weight and you need the smaller ones, or if you gain weight and you fill out the bigger ones, like, I'm okay. Maybe he was actually just being really nice.
So he's basically buying for, like, eight generations of Christmases,
right,
regardless of my sister's weight.
Exactly. He was thinking forward is what he was doing.
Like, he was kind of giving, like, a story of, like, this underwear represents when you were a cute little baby girl and you are blossoming into the woman that I love. And this represents the awkward college years where you didn't know where you were at, but you knew you were going somewhere.
This sounds so creepy, man.
Sadly, I could see a pedophile telling this in a court. It's like, no, you just don't understand. And this represents when your melons really come in.
Yeah, I don't know that like, I guess it, like, I would be better. It would be better if I was with my wife rather than going solo. Is a weird experience, man. I feel like there's a lot of looks. Maybe there's not, and maybe it's just me, like, overreacting. But I still, like, I feel sweaty. I feel instantly like, oh boy, I don't belong here, kind of feeling.
Well, do you think if it'd be easier if you just go, listen, I know the whole Obi gift trend, but can we just go together and you pick up something you like? Because I'm at least hoping that that's not the gift that decides whether your wife has a good or a bad Christmas. Like, I'm really praying that she's not. So it's like, all right, I got the ring, I got the new car, but this underwear falls under my radar. You know, there's going to be a lot of hell for my husband to pay for.
Well, it's not so much that, like, because I guess I bring it on myself because I go and do it and kind of keep this little tradition alive and involved. And I feel like the minute I stop, she would be like, oh, man, like, Obi didn't get me underwear this year. This year. So I don't know.
I guess the best way to do it is get that $5 pair of underwear from Walmart or Target. Where she just like, all right, I don't want this anymore. Just to make your life easier, just tank.
Or maybe the play is to go now and really buy like, you know, 15, 20 pair of underwear and kind of be invested for the next few Christmases.
Why don't you get by yourself different color pairs of underwear and see which one she's like, ooh, that's nice.
Okay,
where you go, got it, got the matching orange underwear from my honey. Good job, Obi.
So you think me and her should match? Like we're yeah. matching underoos?
Well, yeah. This goes through my head a ton. And,
well, probably probably because you and your wife have matching Disney underwear.
Well, I mean, we want you to join in the love that we share. We look at you two and we say something's missing from that relationship.
It would
and
we be
no. It has to do. With undergarments.
It would be hilarious if you had underwear that said mini on it. Would be
No. I draw the line of t-shirts. There is nothing else. I mean, we could go above with sweatshirts, but we can't go under.
So okay? You don't have any like Pluto face underwear?
No.
Underwear with the ears on the side?
No, I just Donald Duck it.
Oh, good. Just nothing down there.
Just it. Yep. Thank you. You got the reference. Good job.
Yeah,
good
see,
job.
Yeah, I can't do nothing down there. It's too. I had to do it a few times, like when there's no clean underwear and whatnot. But I can't do the whole free ball, and it's not working for me.
Worst case, you just get a pair of gym shorts or bathing suit. That's the emergency.
Yeah, that's real bad. Then, like Victoria said, I hate the end part because then there's like no concealing it, like. They put it in a bag that's it's so small, like you can only hold it with like three fingers, and then it's like fluorescent pink, and you have to like strut through the mall. Like everybody knows exactly what you're shopping for too when you got that bag.
Maybe what you should just do is the second you give it, like grab the underwear out of the bag and shove it in your pocket.
Yeah. Then I like give
Why
her.
Why is it so wrinkled? What the hell? Did Obi get this pair too?
Why is there a Dunkin' Donuts receipt in the crotch?
Because you're my little crumb bum.
Yeah. Quick Check? Where'd you. They sell these at Quick Check? No, I don't know. See, like a confident man, a man with confidence, would just go in there and be like proud to be buying his girl underwear, but not me. Not me. I still feel like a 14 year old boy upon entering the underwear store.
Well, I feel in the end, you could just like confess to the wife and make it kind of like a couple's thing. It might bring you tighter. I feel. She gets what she wants. It could be leading to a romantic thing. I'll let you decide on that. And it could be like your little annual Christmas tradition. Instead of going caroling, you buy underwear on December 23rd together.
What if we combine them and we we caroled yeah. while shopping for underwear?
Oh, my Lord. We got to copyright that. Anybody listening, don't you dare underwear carol. That is verbal shenanigans and not yours.
Oh, underwear, oh, underwear.
Hello, we're the Fruit of Looms.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a natural segue into our guests. We might as well get to them.
Oh, yeah.
Early on here, you know.
But, you know, not apples and oranges, just a straight apple and apple right there.
I mean, nothing says rugby like women's underwear. That's all I have to say.
Nope.
So I guess it's guest time, Berlu, which is our favorite time, which is it's got to be 99.9% of why people even tune into our show to hear.
Feel we should change the format to instead of us talking to each other for 15 guests and then another 15, I feel it should be blank air. For that 15,
gotcha.
Followed by the good interview, and then blank air one more time. Maybe I'll make a Maybe I'll put in a Dukes of Hazzard sound effect in the middle somewhere, but so I think that's our niche.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like intro song, let the intro song just fade out, like 15 minutes of silence, and then like, hey, Mike, it's guest time in the middle of the, you know, the interview.
We'll put it on YouTube where we just stare at each other and like not even acknowledge each other in any way.
That sounds great.
It'd be perfect.
It would be a lot less prep work too, which would be nice. But not that we do too much prep work anyway. But who we got?
Scott, as you may know, Major League Rugby is in its third season here in the United States.
Correct.
And in 2020, Atlanta joined the league with Rugby ATL. So today we're lucky enough to be talking with a coach and a player from the team. We have assistant coach, attack coach, Lee Allen, and one of their pickups, scrum half, Amen Matthews. And we're going to be talking with them about the new league, the new team, and the growing sport of rugby.
I think you should volunteer as like maybe their practice dummy for like a, you know, some social media stuff for us. Like let them knock you around a little bit, let put you in the middle of the scrum and Verbal Shenanigans shirt.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I mean, just looking at you, you could go in a bar and say you're a rugby player without any information, and people will buy a full amount, whether they think maybe you're questioning your skinniness or anything like that. Just looking at your face with the beard, I think people go, okay, I buy it.
All right. Well, I mean, look, there's a couple things on the list I'd rather pass for, like movie star, you know, that guy from that show. But I guess I could take rugby player. That's kind of a cool alter ego I could pretend with. The problem would be when, as soon as someone asked me about rugby, I would be like, you know, I'm in the scrum, you know, and that's kind of where the end would be.
You know, you remember that game where the guy kicked the ball?
No.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, that was me.
That was me. Yeah, it was a tough kick, but I kicked it.
So, let's get Coach Lee Allen and Amen Matthews on the line. All right, so we have quite a good foursome here, Mike. We got two people from Rugby ATL. Mike, who we got on the line here?
What we got here is we got attack coach Lee Allen, and we have scrum, a part of the team, the scrum half, Amen Matthews. Is that Amen? Amen?
Amen.
Amen, okay. Awesome. So, like, right off the bat, looking up on you, Amen, I see you're a Jersey guy.
Yeah.
Which kind of excites us and all. Like, we're both from Jersey and all. That's why we're going to be talking to you more than Coach Lee, unfortunately. He's not from Jersey. We have nothing in common. He's just going to sit here for 30 minutes listening to us chat about, like, pork roll.
Don't hold it against him. He's still a good guy.
So, we were just talking with Coach Lee about kind of his journey. You know, he came over here. This is his first time in the United States. Coming over from New Zealand, like Coach, right off the bat, I gotta kind of ask you your first thoughts being over here with rugby, the league being fairly new in the States. What's your first reaction to kind of reaction you're getting here down in Georgia?
Oh, brilliant! I think the people are really showing up. It's a very different experience to back in New Zealand. I feel like the people here get right amongst it. It's very much an entertainment. I know for us, the attendance we've had has been 97% at Rugby ATL Stadium, so it's been fantastic. And even the standard of rugby has been brilliant. The skills, the physicality, the speed is top notch.
So, Coach, you're over New Zealand. How do you get associated with this? Do they reach out to you? Do you reach out to them? Do you hear the whispers of a league starting in the United States and you get interested? How did they find you?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Just connections, really. But the thing about the Major League Rugby is there's so many people wanting to come over here now. It's such a good opportunity in terms of the standard of the rugby, but also the lifestyle. I think it's a really great lifestyle. It's a brilliant place to come and experience life. And like I say, the standard of rugby is growing, and the American giant is starting to build momentum. So it's definitely a place you want to get into now.
Now, you were a former player, and pretty young you had to retire coming off some injuries. Can you give us some background on like what happened and what made you decide to just hang it up and stay in coaching?
Yeah, so my background is I played Modern Cup back in New Zealand for Otago, and then I played Super Rugby for the Highlanders. And just throughout my career, I just picked up the odd head knock, and I decided to retire early, just on my own bat, purely because I really enjoyed the coaching side of the game, probably more than the playing side. So I just started on that path a bit earlier than most. I love the technical, tactical side of it and really trying to break down the opposition. So that was the big reason I got into coaching. And I was lucky enough that the teams I was involved with actually brought me on board straight away to start my coaching career early. So, yeah, I was just lucky.
So, Eamon, being from Jersey, you know, I grew up in Jersey my whole life. Not too much rugby on every corner and every park on the weekend. How did you get involved in this?
So, I was pretty standard American kid growing up. I played football in the fall. I played baseball in the spring.
Right.
And actually, when I was, I think, 13 or 14, the Jersey City PAL League, the Police Athletic League.
Yep.
They started a flag rugby team, and my family on my dad's side are Irish, and so all my uncles and my dad had played like very social men's rugby in the 80s and 90s.
Gotcha.
And I knew they played, so when the PAL started up a league, I'd always wanted to try it, and like the flag was a nice kind of introduction to the game, just kind of taught basic, you know, passing, basic rules, like all the simple parts of the game. And then I was actually lucky enough to, I went to Xavier High School in Manhattan, which has the oldest rugby program for high schools in the country.
Right.
And it was probably one of the only high schools that I've come across where rugby is the biggest sport in the school.
Hmm.
So I then played all my 4 years of high school, went on to play in college, and when I really loved and enjoyed the sport, and then as I kept playing, realized I wanted to take it more seriously, and luckily with the MLR, I was able to, and still am able to kind of chase that dream and pursue the highest level of playing that I can.
Nice.
Now, you just got picked up by Rugby Land this year. Just out of curiosity, from on the Scholastic side, coming over from St. Bonaventure, what's your first thoughts from going from college rugby to professional rugby?
Definitely the speed of the game was a huge jump up. And then I know it sounds cliche, but the professionalism of everything.
Yep.
I mean, our coach at St. Bonaventure coached with Scott Lawrence, who's our ATL coach, for a while when he was down in Georgia. So he brought an element of that professionalism to our university when he came, and that was a big jump for me. But definitely coming into the MLR, it's just all the little things that matter and stack, and that, you know, you're expected to do, and we should do. But just that sort of that aspect of it becoming second nature, and you know what your schedule is, and you know what's expected of you, as well as just the speed and expectations of the game. Nice. Have all been, you know, an increase and an adjustment, to say the least.
Nice. Yeah, so I guess this is for Lee and Eamon. So we've on the show, we've had the pleasure of talking to a lot of people from a lot of niche sports or startup sports, but we talked to Marcelo Balboa a couple of times, who is, he was at the, you know, U.S. soccer player for a long time, and he was at the very, very beginnings of the MLS. And, you know, especially in a city like Atlanta, you see how successful it was. But we got to hear all like the you know, the origin stories of the MLS and what the players had to do and what it was kind of like in the very beginning stages. So what as you guys are kind of at the beginning stages of this league and this team and everything, give us a little like peek behind the curtain. What is it like, one, I guess, for you, Lee, coming into this brand new team, this brand new sport that's really trying to grab roots in the United States? And also, Eamon, what is it like seeing something basically being born in front of you. So I guess Lee first, what is it like for you?
Personally, coming in, it's actually been a really easy transition. I think Eamon touched on it, just the professionalism and how smooth the operation has been so far is exactly like it is back in New Zealand. To me, it definitely doesn't feel like it's a new competition,
right?
Which is really nice. I think the beautiful part about this is it's more the momentum of the fan base and the exposure of the Major League Rugby that's probably the big bonus is just putting America on the map. And I think it's growing local American talent like Eamon and like majority of our squad and everyone else in the competition. So going forward, I think it's brilliant for USA Rugby and what they can actually build off this into going into World Cups and the international rugby.
Yeah. And how about you, Eamon?
Oh, I definitely agree with Lee. I mean, the team itself is a really, really good mix of local guys from Georgia, American players in general, and then we also have a couple international players who have played at high levels in their respective countries. And it's been awesome for them to come over and just kind of show, you know, what the expectations are and kind of things that they've done for their whole lives in playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mixed really well with the guys here, you know, who we have an understanding of like American sports and how they go, and then the nice influx and mixture of the rugby mindset and the rugby culture that goes along with that. It's all mixed really, really well. And just like Lee said, I mean, he's obviously had more experience with professional teams environments than I have, but it's been a really, really good transition, and it definitely plays off like a high level professional club. It doesn't really seem like a fledgling, you know, it's our first year
right.
kind of situation.
It's cool.
Now I know when with these new leagues, like the XFL, they played around with rules. I know when MLS started, they toyed around with certain things. Does Major League Rugby, is it pretty much a standard of what the international game is, or do they have any kind of tweaks that they're trying to play with the league?
No, it's very much the standard of international rugby at this stage. That's obviously a very exciting, high-tempo game, so we wouldn't want too many tweaks to it.
So what are you guys doing? Like, are you seeing, like, I know, like, a lot of people, we see rugby on TV in America, and like, oh, yeah, that's cool. We're interested, but it usually stops there for a lot of people. Like, you know, you get it on TV here and there. But now I feel like the sports market, with the internet and being able to stream anything, and you could follow any sport you want from anywhere in the world, really, which is a great opportunity for you guys, because I think people are people are definitely ready for different sports, and rugby is, I think, something that could really tie into American culture because they, you know, how much they love football and how much soccer is growing, and you know, kind of combines the athleticism of those sports. How are you guys seeing a lot of interest from not only just fans but actually like youth sports or anything like that? Are you seeing an influx of interest?
Oh, I think we definitely are. I mean, the fans have been absolutely amazing just so far in the two home games we've had, and then in our lone away game so far, we had a viewing party at two of the local pubs, and they were both jam-packed with fans who were coming to watch the games. And that aspect, so, I mean, the Atlanta fans have been top-notch. And then we also, earlier in the fall, the Rugby ATL, we ran youth clinics every Friday night.
Oh, nice.
And we had really, really good numbers to all of them. A lot of local, you know, local kids, but also kids who came from all over Georgia. And we had a couple of the guest coaches come even from Tennessee, and I think one from Alabama, and just really, really good Southeast USA recognition and just the numbers we were getting. It's been huge. They've been great so far.
That's awesome.
Talk a little bit about
my side, I'm probably being new to the USA and getting amongst the culture and going out and experiencing life, just asking people about rugby because I thought they'd have limited knowledge on it. There's actually a lot more people out there that know
right.
about rugby than I thought, which is exciting for me. And we've seen it at our home games with the attendance, the entertainment we're putting on, and yeah, everyone just showing up. So it's fantastic.
Now tell us a little bit about the buying of the team since you all came together and this is the first experience. Like, what does the team generally do together to kind of just get that chemistry going? Are you guys like going out together at night and just like chatting away? Are you going to events, going zip lining or something like that? What do you guys do for fun?
So, I mean, just from a player perspective, we obviously spend the majority of our days together, whether it be at practice or at the facility. So there's natural, you know, organic bonding that comes in that. But we all, with the team has done an awesome job of setting us up in communities where we all kind of literally live together. So it's when we're away from the field, we're still together. We may not always be talking rugby. But that's where a lot of the, you know, the hangouts, getting to know each other on personal levels. And that's kind of what you have to know, because you want to be able to play for the man on your left and your right. And we do a lot of that. You know, we'll often grab dinner together. On the weekends, you know, we'll just go to one of the guys' apartments or hang out, play cards, things like that. Just it's been a lot of fun, to be honest with you. It really hasn't been forced at all. It's been really natural, just how you know, on with new people, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So Eamon, you had touched on it. You were talking about the professionalism of the schedule and things like that. For those of us like who aren't completely familiar with the game, and this is a new, you know, a league that's getting its upper. What is the schedule of a rugby player? And coach, you too. Like, what is the time commitment here? What does a week look like?
So I mean, it's a full time job.
Nice.
You know, we have, if our schedule worked from Sunday backwards, and Sunday being our first day, then that's obviously our game day.
Mm-hmm.
We have recovery day Monday, and we have practices Tuesday and Wednesday, with various film and lifts and field sessions organized in, and then you know, kind of go that way for the rest of the week. And lead back into Sunday with every day having a set goal and purpose. But I mean, you're putting in, you know, hours. I mean, it's not a part-time gig at all. It is a very full-time professional job.
Nice. How about you, Coach?
Yeah, agreed. The layout of the week is very busy. So if we play on a Sunday, as a coaching group and management group, we'll watch the footage that night, and then leading into the Monday, it's all day reviewing the game and breaking it down and touching base with the management. And then leading into the Tuesdays as a big review and correctives day and installment day. So lighter for the players, but a lot of mental prep and learning goes into the Tuesday. And then the Wednesday is a big training day for us. So we put everything on pace. We have double training and a gym. And then Thursday's normally a recovery day for the players, but for the management, we start looking ahead and previewing for the next opposition for the next week. It's a good day for us to really start looking at some footage there. And then Friday's another big day for us, a big double training day with the gym. And Saturday's all about putting the icing on the cake, and then Sunday's about putting it all together and putting on a show for the fans.
Yeah.
Speaking of training, when I put out to some people that we were going to talk to you guys, one person in particular asked, what training techniques has led to Rugby ATL's vicious attacking defense?
Lee, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, 100%. I think the big thing with defense is you've got to invest time into actually training it. You can probably see around the league, the teams who are defending really well, you can tell, are investing a lot of time into it. And obviously, we have Blake Bradford leading our defence, mentored by Scott Lawrence, who is obviously a fantastic coach and a fantastic defensive coach. So it's really easy to suppose transitions are having a ferocious defence when you've got coaches of that calibre.
Now, a part of growing the sport and adding to the fun of it is having a rival. And I know just from being down here listening to local sports radio, it seems like a lot of the hosts are kind of salty on the New Orleans area. It must be the whole Saints-Falcons thing. So just out of curiosity, did anybody like whisper in you guys' ears about how important it was to take on NOLA a couple weeks ago? And was there anything extra special about getting that win about a team so close to your state where you feel you're going to be talking with them a lot, for lack of a better term?
I mean, we respect all of our opponents, and we know that we have to bring, you know, 100% every single week. But part of representing Atlanta, we definitely, you know, adopted that rivalry sense in a little, maybe a lot. But we didn't want to disappoint the fans, and we wanted to show that we cared about what Atlanta cares about, because we know that without our support and without the people here, we wouldn't have much. So it definitely, you know, it was nice. It felt good for the win, but we take that attitude into every game we play, no matter who we're going up against. We always want to put on the best show we can for the people at home.
Nice. So now, you guys, like this, as the sport begins to take off, and I think it certainly has a really good chance of being super successful. Are you guys, when it comes to the off season, are you at the point where you're working other jobs and having to find, you know, other things to supplement your income, or is rugby enough to really to keep you on, you know, just focused on rugby?
So for me personally, I come here for the season coaching, and then I'll fly back to New Zealand and then coach for 6 months back there. So it works really well for me in terms of the seasons working together. So at this stage, it's just fantastic. It's keeping me in the game. It's keeping me coaching all year round. Nice. So loving what it's doing for me at the moment.
So is the season like kind of opposite, like the time period, like the American season opposite the New Zealand season? Or?
Yeah, 100%. So basically, I'm just chasing winters at the moment, which my wife isn't too happy about. But
yeah,
it works really well. So it's a winter sport. So obviously, yeah, nice. I'm going back to the opposite season when I go back to New Zealand.
Well, that works out well.
Mm. Now, Lee, I got to ask you one question. Like, when I was preparing for this podcast and looking up on you guys, I noticed your Instagram name is Mountain Donkey. just out of curiosity.
You like that one, do you?
Yeah, it caught my eye. So I said to myself, I got to put this down in the notes for a question. Where does the Mountain Donkey come from?
Funnily enough, it actually originated about this time last year. So I went trekking to Mount Everest Base Camp, and I just needed a place to put all my photos. So I started an Instagram account, and my name was taken, and I couldn't figure it out. So I just put down a random name, which was Mountain Donkey, which was actually what I was passing on the way up to Mount Everest Base Camp. There's a lot of mountains, and there's a lot of donkeys. So I just it came out like that. So nothing special, really.
So you didn't want to go with, like, Lee139. You decided, you know what?
it doesn't really have the same ring to it. I had to give the people what they wanted.
I mean, ultimately, I think it's the better move. Mountain Donkey is much easier to remember, but it's a bit of a toss to straight to Mountain Donkey from Lee Allen 3 or whatever the hell you could have been.
Yeah, that's right.
But
you know, like I was,
as I was preparing for this, like he had Mountain Donkey, and Iman's name is his position is Scrum Half. I'm like, I'm trying to think, would I rather be known as the Mountain Donkey or the Scrum Half? I think both would be pretty cool when you would like walk into a bar and like somebody would be like, I don't think I want to mess with that guy, you know.
Yeah, I think like if Lee becomes this renowned coach and his nickname is like the Mountain Donkey, I think that's pretty damn. Oh God, Mountain Donkey's gonna kick our ass at practice, man. Today. You know,
it's got a ring. It's got a ring to it, I reckon. You might forget it
when you're in the Hall of Fame and there's a plaque of you and it says Lee in quotes Mountain Donkey Allen. I think it's a good one.
Oh, I love it.
So what?
Well,
what
guys,
is, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike. No, I'm go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say. So what is the you know, like we growing up in America, you know, the culture of baseball, culture of whatever, football, things like that. What is the culture of rugby players as far as outside of the game? Like, do you know a lot of the players on the other teams, especially since it's, you know, a smaller league right now with only a couple of teams? Do you guys know each other? Do you guys hang out in the off season, or is it pretty much everyone's kind of localized to their wherever they're from? Like, you guys are in Atlanta.
So I would say that the rugby world in America is pretty tight knit in general.
Right.
Just from, you know, playing high school to college and then now at this level, and even just with a couple of, you know, teams and organizations in between, most people at least have an idea of one another. And then you also got to remember that like I'm from New Jersey, but I'm playing down in Atlanta. So I know a lot of the guys who are on the New York team just from local, you know, growing up and whatnot.
Right.
And then likewise, we have guys on our team who have been out in Colorado or originally from the West Coast. You know, some of the international guys know each other just from back home. So it is, I mean, it's kind of cliche, but it truly is a sport where it's like you try and, you know, beat the crap out of each other on the field for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
And as soon as the whistle blows, you help the guy up. And,
right,
you know,
right.
you guys are right back to being friends. So it's awesome in that aspect just to see how much that culture is grown and been adopted in America with the fan bases and just the players in general. But I'd say it's professional on the field, but we do know a lot of each other within the league.
Now, Coach, as far as, you know, recruiting players and youth, you know, if you're looking for younger kids, let's say the high school age, are you looking for you know, kids that have, like, say Americans, like, have football experience or hockey or basketball? Are you looking for a specific body type? Like, what would be some, like, if you were going to go recruit and start to look at, you know, build a youth program, what kind of athlete would you guys be looking for?
Look, everyone's different, but in terms of myself, I think you need to look at what sort of sporting background they have. Are they a genuine athlete? So if you look at really good athletes, and it's probably evident in the Major League Rugby, players who have come from a multi-sport background where they haven't specialised in one sport growing up,
yep,
actually have a range of skills and a range of talent. And I think that's why rugby is such an exciting sport, is because you have to attack, you have to defend, you have to be able to kick, you have to be able to pass, all these skills. It's actually quite a difficult game to play. And even probably more so in America, you've got so many sports and so many athletic people. It's a really good market and a really good place to try and recruit athletes.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're at a pretty good place at Life University because they have the whole history down there of winning titles and so forth.
Yeah, correct. A massive history and obviously a very successful one. And we've actually watched a couple of their games now, and they've got some phenomenal athletes in their program as well, as do a lot of other high schools and colleges around America. So it's exciting times.
Awesome. Well, Iman, Lee, we're coming up on our time. We really appreciate you guys coming on and telling us about how the year is going. I know you got a game tomorrow, so obviously you're going to be preparing for that. For the fans out there, if they want to get a hold of either of you or learn more about Rugby ATL, where should they go?
MountainDonkey.com. Mountain Donkey.
That's right. Instagram, Mountain Donkey. So the best place to go is rugbyatl.rugby. It's got all our information. If you want to get tickets, access to our games, everything is on there. And we kick off every Sunday at Rugby ATL Stadium at 3 p.m. At Life Center. So get down and get amongst.
Well, the good old Mountain Donkey, Mike.
Yeah. We learned so much here. I mean, if everybody be saying to themselves, you know, I don't know what rugby is, but I do know what a Mountain Donkey is.
Yeah, they'd be like, did you hear that interview with the Mountain Donkey? I don't remember what sport it was about, but I remember the name. Mountain Donkey is as good as a name as a couple months ago we interviewed a guy in a band, in the Chris Lee band, and he was Hammy Fat Ass, if you remember.
Yeah. It seems like, yeah, the mountain donkey would be his sidekick in that movie. Because he was trying to do, like, the perfect belly flop. And I could totally see, like, that's the legendary belly flopper, mountain donkey.
See, I see the opposite. I see, like, oh, no, what will become of Hammy Fatass? He's, like, trapped in some kind of thing. There's, like, a blade coming to him, like the old Batman movie. He's like, help me, mountain donkey. Oh. Help me, mountain donkey. He's, like, bust through the wall. Like, yeah! And he stops the saw. You know, like, I'm picturing more of, like, a superhero team.
And now we're talking about it. I could totally see mountain donkey being the villain, almost, like, and, yeah, rookie. What do you think? You think you can come up to this pool and beat a mountain donkey? I don't think so.
Yeah, or it's like, you know, like a movie about kids going to camp, you know, and a sleepaway camp, and it's kind of like a haunt, and you just hear the legend of mountain donkey the whole time, like, oh, man, don't go to cabin number 5. Mountain donkey lives there. And you don't really know, and you see him until the end of the movie. He comes out, and he's like this legend and this mythological creature that kind of haunts the camp. Like the curse of mountain donkey.
Like, as much as I want to help promote Rugby ATL, now I'm thinking we just trash this interview and we just start writing these scripts so we can get the copyrights in before they figure something out.
Either that, or I'm going to go opposite, right? And I'm going to go get the Instagram handle of I'm going to say I am Coach Lee Rugby ATL handle. And we'll have to exchange for the rights to Mountain Donkey. So ultimately, my goal is to acquire the Mountain Donkey Instagram handle.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It will be ours. This will be the Mountain Donkey podcast from now on.
Yeah. So, guys, when you go to look for Verbal Shenanigans on Instagram and you see Coach Lee Allen, Rugby ATL, there's a reason I changed it. It's ultimately to get the Mountain Donkey name that we could use on the podcast here. So, but yeah, I could easily see the interest in rugby has definitely. People are always interested in rugby, I feel like. So I feel like if the league is done right and the exposure is done right, I could easily see it being successful in the markets, you know, just picking the right markets. Just very similar to MLS. I mean, MLS is majorly successful, you know, so like I could.
Absolutely. And they're growing at a good pace this year. Like you said, they grew 3 teams. They got a new deal with Fox and ESPN.
Right.
So, I mean, keep it up, and I'll definitely be going to see a game and reporting back on it. I will definitely start the chants during the game to make sure this thing builds.
Mountain donkey. Everybody's like, what? You get escorted out of the game? Like, I think that man's drunk.
Like, the road team's looking around like, what's going on here? We've never been through this before.
Yeah, I mean, like, you could totally, like I was trying to say in the interview, like, you don't need the major backing to get the sport to take off. I mean, look how many people we've had on this show between, you know, the MLS, yes, but, like, all the niche sports we've had between Kirby Chambliss a couple weeks ago with air racing and
World Chase Tag.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, they came on the show, and that started building up. I mean,
the other day, I saw that on TV. I forget where I was. I was, like, I think it was at a bar or something. I look up, and it was, like, on ESPN something. It was, like, World Chase Tag. I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah. You know, like, I wonder if it's taken off, you know?
They couldn't put our emblem in there when it was on ESPN. They had to.
Still one of our coolest things. We had a sponsorship on a sport. It was I kind of forgot about that. No, like all the guys we talked to, the divers, there's a little bit of something for everyone. Like all those Red Bull sports, and you could follow it so easily now because it doesn't have to be on a major network. It could be even streamed to your phone or computer or whatnot. So,
absolutely.
You know, like I always say, I follow Liverpool closer probably than I follow like most American sports these days, and I could follow it. The coverage is like amazing. Like it's like anything. There's pregame shows. There's anything you want between following their Instagram and everything. I follow English Premier League soccer probably more than I follow hockey at the moment. More than I follow the Giants the last couple of years. Like I actually like the sport better.
Well, to be fair, I think Liverpool's doing a tad better than the Devils and the New York Giants. I got to be honest with
that,
you.
That is correct. Liverpool, by the way, who are on at the moment recording the game, by the way, have not lost this season, and they are, knock on wood, ending their 30-year drought of winning the Premier League. So they won the Champions League last year. They should be able to lock this Premier League up in the next – I think they need 5 total wins left for the season, and they lock it up automatically. So pretty exciting time to be a Liverpool fan. It's been pretty cool. So, yeah, Rugby ATL. They need Little John involved in that. They need – you know, Little John needs to be involved in Rugby ATL.
Maybe. Oh, no doubt.
Maybe
no
Usher. Doubt. But Rugby ATL. All right, Berlew, are you inspired to maybe, you know, get rid of the cast, leave the cast, please be inspired to leave the cast, and join the Atlanta rugby team?
I feel it's due. You know, 5 years in podcasting, I'm not as high as I feel I should be, as we talked about my complexes. I feel it needs to be next level, so... I feel I'll have to at least experiment with rugby to get me to the levels of world acknowledgement.
Well, it's funny because I wanted to ask you some things about this complex that you've been developing.
Okay.
Now, I, as you know, am not an expert on all things rugby.
Mm-hmm.
You, however... You've studied the game. You scheduled our guest today. So I mean, like, I feel like you have inside rugby knowledge that many of us don't. So I was wondering if you would help us dissect some of these rugby terms that, you know, the average guy would not know.
Oh well, I mean, Scott, I mean, who else can you turn to but your little partner here? Let's do this.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start with like a simple one?
Okay,
Berlew, what is? I mean, you know I don't. What is the black dot?
The black dot, that's well known. That is the originator of rugby.
His name was the black dot.
Yes, yes. Well, that was his nickname. That was Augustus the black dot DeGrado.
DeGrado, huh?
Yeah, he back in the day, he... He saw this like football thing, which became soccer, and he figured it didn't fit his needs, you know. So I mean, like when people will be talking, like what's the sport to go? He's like, I don't know where, but I'm marking my territory, and he put like a little black dot on his field. He's like, come here in 2 weeks, and okay. You'll see what I made. So 2 weeks later, people show up, and then this. Grand game we know as rugby was born in that field where he marked on the map the black dot.
Wow. It's weird. I mean, I totally believe you. I completely believe you. But it's weird because when I looked it up, it said a mark in the center of the crossbar that connects the goalpost, usually black in color, used to aid kickers with their aiming.
That's dedicated to him, Scott. I mean, what are you going to do? Put a yellow mark up there? I mean, have you no shame for the man who made this great sport?
Oh, all right. Well,
thank you.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
I know. It's fine. It's fine. You'll learn. Continue. Well,
then maybe I'd start with maybe pick it up a little bit, right? More different. Berlew, please inform us what a Gary Owen is.
A Gary Owen? Well, that is the term for when you do a double lateral. You know, it was... Something that was perfected by, again, a man named Gary Owen.
Okay, a lot of names involved in the rules.
Yeah, rugby is a family sport, and they want to include everybody in it. That's why they name all their terms after people. But this guy understood, it's like, you know, this offense is not going down the field as quickly as possible. So he had a little trick where he would lateral the ball, but... His teammate would actually act like he was about to grasp it, but it would go through his hands into the following teammate who was sprinting had a much bigger head start.
Okay.
And would get through the defense. So
wow,
it's like, oh, that's such a Gary Owen.
Nice. It, really interesting, because according to my document, now it could be wrong, it says Gary Owen is an up and under kick. It's a high short punt or behind the defending team.
Well, it's behind like a lateral, and it's like a kick, but with your hands.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Berlo, something that totally confused me, and I had no idea. What is a grubber kick?
The grubber kick?
Yeah, a grubber kick.
That's a little dirty play. I mean, rugby is a respectful sport, but the grubber kick, that's when you kind of you notch the ball in the air, and then on the back follow through, you smack a guy on his top of his foot with your cleats.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little dirty of a play. I do not recommend grubber kicks for the youngsters learning.
No, rugby. I'm surprised it's not named after
here. Refound and know that you're playing a gentleman's game.
So it's not named after a guy like David Grubber or anything like that.
No. Well, I mean, it could have been, but we don't associate it because it's such a nasty kick.
Oh. Well, according to this, it's a type of kick which the ball roll and tumble across the ground, producing irregular bounces, making it hard for the defending team to pick up. Kind of like an onside kick.
Well, it's hard to pick up because somebody just cleated you on the top of the foot. It's clearly the same term. It's a hard ball to pick up.
Gotcha.
You're sitting there going, oh my God, I think you broke the top of my foot.
It's really amazing how much you know. So I guess, you know, Berlo, I don't want to go too far, but let me just ask you one more.
All right.
You know, we can always dissect other sports sometime. But I've always been confused, Berlo, as I'm entering the rugby world. What are the Stellenbosch laws?
The Stellenbosch laws, yes. world famous Stellenbosch laws.
Right.
Well, I mean, those are the rules that command what colors each team wears, Scott.
Oh.
Yes, there is actually a juror grouping of referees that every year the teams go up to them and, like, plead their cases for certain designs and colors, and they determine, like, league protocol, how these kits are designed.
Really?
It's, like I said, it's a very gentleman's game where you can't just go out there with, like, flashy neon orange color or something like that. You're a gentleman. You're like, lawmakers, I would bequeath of you to allow us to wear yellow stripes, and they would, like, question your regions and
question your regions, huh?
Yeah, so, well, you know, they want to learn about your land you come from. Like, if they find, like, yellow does not suit, like, an Atlanta area, they'll be like, well, obviously you're wow, red and white and black. You can't possibly throw yellow stripes onto this kit. So
I mean, wow.
It's like a 3-week process before each team gets their uniforms.
Wow. So. Weird, Berlo. My document says the exact same thing that you just said.
Yeah?
No. The Stellenbosch laws were a set of experimental laws of the rugby union considered by World Rugby. The trials ended in late 2008, and where they were chose to adopt roughly half of the proposed changes.
With the colors, yeah. That's, I mean, I forgot they did stop that in 2008. I mean, I've been keeping up for.
You've had a lot going on in your life.
2007,
right?
Then I stopped. I mean, I have a lot of.
You've had a lot going
interests.
On.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, if you guys want to know other things, like you want to know what the Mully Grubber kick is, if you want to know what the number 8 is, if you want to know on the full. Just tweet at Mike, or tweet at Bro Shenanigans, and he will be glad to. He's trying to help Rugby Atlanta and the rest of the league bring the game to the United States, where you know, it's more accepted, and a guy like Mike can really help you, you know, learn the ropes, if you will. So, Mike, thank you for your insight as always.
Yeah, that's why they call me Rugby Lou.
Oh, gotcha. Another nickname. Well, Berlo. I'm glad that you have really given me the knowledge I need to move forward to become a Rugby Atlanta super fan. So before we go, Berlew, is there anything that you would like to promote other than your knowledge?
We'll promote a Ground and Pound Elite Fitness Center. That's down here in Villarica, Georgia. They teach Taekwondo. They have strength and conditioning, a great workout area. Their gym has been open now for a few months. The first time you visit there, your visit's free. Mm. You don't have to worry about any commitments. Come on down, see what they're teaching down there, and then figure out what you want to do. I mean, they've done a great job with me. I'm just coming off another half marathon that I did on Sunday.
Congratulations.
That's the reason why I couldn't make Rugby ATL's last game, but I will be making one of those. But when I can't go there, I go to Ground and Pound Elite Fitness Center to get my strength on. Great instructors. Highly recommend you check them out.
And if anybody at Ground and Pound is currently listening to podcast, I will put up a significant fee to Ground and Pound Mike's face in the next time he enters the building.
Only one promotion per show, Scott. So if you can cut that out for me, I'd appreciate that.
So if anybody's out there, please. He's the tall guy. You'll recognize his voice. He's got a very distinct voice. Please, Ground and Pound, make the name count on his face.
Scott, I mean, the face is so beautiful. Please don't touch it.
And I will quickly promote a friend of the show. He's actually been on the show, I think it was last Halloween, so Halloween and a half ago. He's been on a lot of Verbal Shenanigans shows themselves, the comedy shows. Very funny comic. Mike Ciccoli, him and another friend, John Kirshner, have started a new podcast. It's just starting up, so you can get in right now, right at the beginning here, and it's called That's My Time. So go check them out. They're two funny dudes, and I'm sure their podcast will be funny as well. So it's called That's My Time. Guys, that's our time.
They won't know anything about rugby.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's our time. I want to thank Rugby Atlanta. Mike, thanks for sitting down with us again here. Another week, another one in the books. And this year continues to roll. And we hope you guys liked what you heard. So if you did like what you heard, you can please go give us a review on iTunes. Or best of all, you share the show with your friends and say, hey, this is a really cool episode. Check it out. And please go check out our back catalog. We've interviewed so many amazing people. Just go and look on the site and you'll see the names we're talking about. And check us out. We are now on Spotify, which is a great listening app, and a whole bunch of other things. BS Podcast Network, Discovery County Network, Denville Radio. Support all our friends, too. So
coming right up.
Yeah, comingrightup.org. So, guys, that's our time. That's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. We'll see you next week. Ground and Pound his face.
Scrum halfing.